The next case is 96-1029, State of Ohio versus Zachary.
That's a pancake extension in your case, though.
Person or car was deemed suspicious based upon one or two anonymous phone calls, apparently to a police station saying this car's got a bunch of people, they've got guns, and they're creating a disturbance. That's, anyone could do that. As the Court of Appeals said, anyone could make that call, couldn't they, and create some problem for someone for whom they wanted to create a problem.
Yes, that's right. Anyone could. But the question is, we would submit is different than that. The question is, what is the officer to do? And then, in our second proposition, based on what the officer does, what's the court to do? In this situation, the predicate is, and I understand the court's question, the predicate is that there is something inherently unreliable about an anonymous call. And in fact, and I think we have to be straightforward with the court, the case law is pretty clear that the courts, not just in this state and certainly not just the federal courts, generally frown on anonymous calls. We ask that that be revisited just briefly for this proposition, that the officer's response was proportional to the information available, and reasonableness is a matter of perspective and proportion.
In what case does it say that a call to the police dispatcher has to be specifically defined, caller identified, and verification made before the police can respond?
I don't think it ever says that in any case.
Well, then what do you want us to revisit?
Yeah.
It seems to me if that doesn't say that, then the issue is, as Judge Young pointed out, I think in his concurrence, as I remember, it was a close call. And that the issue becomes whether or not there has to be identification.
Right.
And it seems to me they're saying there has to be identification. What case says that?
I'm sorry, help me out, Your Honor. You're saying the cases say there has to be identification?
No, I'm saying tell me a case that says there has to be specific identification.
I think the cases generally, and the facts are pretty varied. It's interesting to read the cases cited by the defendant in this case, Brinegar, Sheehan, and Campbell. And those are interesting cases because if the court reads them, when the court's all through, I ask the court to ask itself this question. What are we to tell the police officers to do when they're confronted with these situations? Because as a number of cases indicating, and Terry was the first one, these situations can be very fluid. These officers respond very quickly, often to chaotic situations where they don't really know what they're in the middle of. I've shared that is a nicely written opinion and a reasonable decision. Reasonable lines be different. Back to the word reasonable. We're asking this court to say, in this case only, that two anonymous calls with some detail, the officer's response is simply stopping the vehicle, is a reasonable response. We're not in the issue of probable cause here. We're in the issue of a reasonable action on the part of the state based on the information that's available, and we're asking no more.
Let me ask it a different way. Is there best authority or the authority that you're most concerned with, State v. Smart?
Your Honor, it would not be right for me to say anything other than the case law, I think, is fairly overwhelming that this situation, the courts have not found an anonymous call on its own without further verification by the police officers to be reasonable. I believe the Adams case was a District of Columbia police officer who gets a tip from an informant who's identified in the record as a reliable informant, and the court says that reliability attached to the anonymous part of it overrules or wipes out the inherent unreliability of an anonymous informant. I'm not pretending to stand here with case law supporting the proposition. I'm asking the court to think about it slightly differently, and that is perspective and proportion in analyzing.
Well, how do you interpret Alabama v. White that was cited by the Court of Appeals, which seems to say that the person receiving the information from the anonymous caller, take the police officer out of it. I think we have to go back to what information the dispatcher gets from the anonymous caller before the dispatcher tells the officer to stop the car. And it seems to me in Alabama versus White that there the Supreme Court seemed to be saying that or found that the anonymous caller gave sufficient other or specific information, including predicting the future conduct of the accused or the person by whom they are calling, that seemed to verify that there was some credibility to this caller.
That's correct. The court's analysis is correct. This record is limited to the facts that are before it are. Two dispatch calls go off very quickly within a couple of minutes of each other and involving the same neighborhood, both describing the same problem. The police in that situation, and the record reveals, I think, an officer who isn't dispatched to the call, but who's going to assist, sees the car. And at that moment that he sees the car, with those two calls, was it a reasonable thing for him to do? That's okay. Was it a reasonable thing for him to do to preserve the status quo and stop that vehicle? Is it a seizure? Yes. Is it a reasonable seizure? And that's the point we want this court to
do. Well, I don't think that's the point, though. What advice would you have us, what would you have us write in our opinion that would be advice to the police officer who receives the anonymous call on the telephone? What advice should we give to that? What standard should we give to that officer? Not the one on the street, but the one who sends the officer on the street out to stop the car. What advice would we give to that officer in terms of the information that the receiving officer should require?
With all respect, I don't think there's anything you or I, even this honorable court, can say that goes beyond their own self-interest, that's more motivating to them than their own self-interest. They really do try to gather as much information as they can, to relay as much information as they can. This record is devoid of any backup in that regard, and I would suggest that this may reasonably resemble an awful lot of emergency situations that police are confronted with. Calls come in very quickly.
Sure does.
Sometimes some dispatch systems, depending on what funded and how high the technology is, can lock in. They can automatically bring up an address. Sometimes they try to keep people on the phone so they can talk to them, and they just simply hang up. This is a reality.
Whose determination is it to see whether or not the information they have gives them the probable or the reasonableness to make a stop. The dispatcher in broadcasting that information, or the officer in receiving it and seeing something in front of him that matches that description.
I would suggest the law can only be that it's the officer's.
Absolutely. The dispatcher is obligated, are they not, to transfer as much information as they have received by whatever method they have received, anonymous or not, whatever that information is. The dispatcher doesn't determine probable cause. It's the officer on the scene with seeing these activities and relating them to the information he received, is it not?
That's correct. And I would suggest again that it's in everyone's self-interest to get as much information as they can and relate as quickly as they can. But these situations unfold rather rapidly. And in response to Mr. Chief Justice's question, if you ask me to write the syllabus, in this case, I would say what Adams v. Williams says, a brief stop of a suspicious individual, even if the suspicion comes from two anonymous calls, in order to maintain the status quo momentarily, may be most reasonable. And we would suggest in this instance it was. These officers acted with what was before them as quickly as the situation called for. And all they did was preserve the status quo. I don't think it's fair to analyze this case into its second step, in which they asked the passenger to step out of the vehicle and find a sawed-off shotgun in the seat and then find other ammunition.
Yeah, that was more than status quo.
Well, at that point, there's very little this court or anyone else can say to a police officer when he's confronted.
Well, he has to protect himself.
Protecting himself. The Hawaiian Supreme Court stated that very eloquently a number of years ago. I think we really have two separate issues here. And in the police court, we have to focus on what the officers did at the moment they did it and ask the question, even though they're anonymous, if he makes a brief stop to preserve the status quo and otherwise act reasonably, is this good public policy? Is this good constitutional law?
Let me try mine one more time, because I'm just amazed at this entire argument. You're going down the I-71, how you all get here, 70, I guess, when you get to various places. You pass a highway patrol car. No, better you follow a highway patrol car. Okay. And on the back, what's on the license plate? Call DUI.
Yeah,
right?
My daughter pointed that out.
Okay. Now, if I happen to have a cell phone with me,
right,
and I get on my cell phone and call the number that they put on their car, 911, whatever it is, and I say a green Chevrolet heading at mile marker 57, weaving all over the road, obviously the driver is drunk,
right,
and hang up.
Right.
Police don't have a right to go find him?
I think they do for two reasons. One of them is now, let me make this distinction right now.
I didn't identify myself. I didn't give any more than I told you. Just like these callers to this dispatcher said, those people are involved in this car, the black car, I think it was, and they find him.
But if the driver is intoxicated and weaving all over the road, the officer is going to observe that. That's the suspicion. That's a totally different case than this one.
Not if he catches up with him, he's not leaving.
Isn't that what the police officer should do? You asked a little while ago, what direction can we give to police officers in these situations when they receive anonymous calls from the dispatcher? Isn't that what they should do? Is if they see a green vehicle and they've received this information that this vehicle is weaving all over, obviously drunk, that they make their own observations, and that they should have done the same thing in this instance, observed.
Well, except in this instance, if there are people who have cause to disturb someone else and who have guns, observing the course of travel of that motor vehicle wouldn't have done them any good. Let me answer.
Well, but before they just stop, they should have a surveillance for some time with the vehicle. You're getting into a bit of a vigilante if the police are able to stop every vehicle that they get an anonymous call on, that the people are suspicious in some manner.
Well, I think that overheats the argument slightly with all due respect. And if I can address Justice Douglas's concern, suggest for purposes of argument that, as Mr. Chief Justice said, you should observe that vehicle. But let's assume in this instance that all he has is two calls. It's a maroon Buick with a black vinyl top, or a black Buick with a maroon vinyl top. What should they do? He should stop it because if, as the justices are concerned, it is an anonymous call, and as the Court of Appeals said, it's just somebody trying to jack you around, or if we want to stop the excesses of law enforcement, the most like that, by the way, is one of two possibilities. It's either people in a car with guns, or it's somebody getting in trouble. Now, who's going to know? Who's in the position to most likely know who made those calls, or to suggest where they might pursue the information in regard to that crime? And I would suggest that it is that black Buick. Again, they're confronted with a situation. Either there's guns in it, or there's somebody messing with them. The only way I can straighten either of those out, so far as I know right now, and this is Officer Painter, so far as I know right now, is to make a proportional response, a response that has perspective, and that is to stop the car and say, may I speak to you for a moment? When they determine that there's no guns, no sawed-off shotguns, no crack cocaine, sir, can you help us? Somebody is obviously trying to get in trouble. Who in this neighborhood can you send us to look into this further? We come back to this again and again.
Aren't you saying, though, in that scenario, aren't you saying that we can presume the anonymous call to be correct unless proven otherwise?
No, I wouldn't. We can presume no more and no less than what the anonymous calls in this case indicate, and that is there's trouble afoot of one kind or another. And the prudent and diligent and conscientious police officer is going to go and look into it. And we need to give them some guidance when they're confronted with situations like this. And I would suggest...
So you want us to err on the side of the police?
No, sir. No, sir. I want us to err on the side of reasonable. And reasonable is perspective and proportion. We have submitted first, last, and always that this officer's response was proportional. And any analysis of reasonable, and that's could be an elusive term, but any analysis of reasonable inevitably takes in perspective and proportion. We cannot simply err on the side of anonymity and say, these things are just worthless. And I would suggest the case law right now, all that says that, they are just worthless. And we can't
well,
do that
either. Well, they're not worthless if, for instance, in Justice Douglas's example, if the caller says, I see somebody weaving down Interstate 70, surely the officer's going to respond to that. And if the officer observes the suspicious conduct, i.e. the weaving or whatever, then there's no problem. I think the difficulty is that the suspicion, in your argument, the suspicion element is satisfied by the anonymous caller. That creates the suspicion rather than the tip that to the police, you'd better check this out because I think something's wrong here, and then the police go and see something's wrong, or they don't see something's wrong. And here they didn't see anything was wrong until they stopped the car and asked the person to get out of the car. Is that...
That's correct.
Sure.
I would plead at least no contest to having overstated the case, and Mr. Justice, or Chief Justice, called me on it. They're not reckless, as you indicated. In some situations, however, there's simply no more that they can do. There, in one of the cases cited by defense counsel, somebody turns in some kids for smoking pot, and he simply, all he can do in that circumstance is go up there and try and find out what's going on. And the court said, that's not right. And when the court reads that well done opinion, I think but reasonable minds can and should differ in this instance. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Patzer. Mr. Wetter.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Thomas R. Lawrence, Jr. I'm with the Ohio Public Defender Office. We were appointed to represent Ms. Chanel Zachary in this case. I think this case comes down to the fact that you just have to read Alabama v. White to decide. In Alabama v. White, the U.S. Supreme Court
prosecutor, what would be helpful to do? So we get two separate calls in short period of time. Somebody's out and out shooting a gun at a car. He's waving at a car. They find a car matching their identity. What do they do? I mean, following the car around like a drunk driving car, unless the police say, oh, there's a cop coming out, let's keep shooting. I mean, what's the officer's response to be? Can't even search warrant. We can't even have enough for a probable cause stop. We can't possibly get a search warrant, could we? In the back of search the car?
No, Your Honor. In this particular case, the police didn't do enough, and that's the problem with this case. The call was that there was disturbance at one address, and then there was a car full of people, a black vehicle with a maroon top, and they had guns. We don't know what kind of disturbance it was. We don't even know if the guns were used or even supposed to be used in the disturbance. The other call was there's a disturbance at another entrance. There's no mention of a car, no mention of guns, no mention of people, and it's in a different location in the neighborhood. Now, this police officer was to go to the second call. He never made it. Nobody made it to any of the disturbance calls, so nobody verified that. What this police officer should have done was when he saw that car, he should have told the dispatcher, I have in my sights a car that matches the description in this call. I'm going to follow this car. I'm now on this road. The other parts of the dispatch should have gone through to the services to find out there was more information. This police officer could have observed the car if there was any traffic violation. The U.S. Supreme Court says, stop or hold, you're fine if there's no 14th Amendment violation. That's what you should observe to see if there was a violation.
So your answer would be that cop car one follows the police car around, and then cop cars two and three go to the two addresses with the most.
They're already assigned to go to those addresses. There's no extra warrants, an extra potential loss of police power here. They could have found out there was more information to provide to this police officer on why he should stop this car. Now, the police officer, when he's observing the car, if they start acting suspicious, then based on the earlier call and his personal observations, he may then have a suspicious car.
But if there's no other activity, you follow it for three blocks, pulls up in front of a house, the occupants get out, walk into the house, it's over. The guns are still all there and got all this, but it's over.
Actually, the law says if the car stops, the people exit the car, the police officer then can talk to them if they want to talk. And you go up and ask any citizen a question.
Oh, yeah, but we have another case that says that you don't have to respond. You can walk away, don't we?
Right, we do. And then the question is, was there a violation of the law? The disturbance said if this car was involved in that disturbance ended. There's no longer any activity. We don't even know that that was a crime. There are a lot of people in Ohio running around with guns in their car, and it's not illegal to have a gun in your car. It depends on how you carry it, what kind it is, and what you do. So those two facts in the call did not mean that there had been illegal activity. This officer had to exercise some judgment. He did not. That's the problem with this case.
Couch.
He should have observed that car.
The Alabama versus White case upon which you rely really sets the totality of the circumstances test, doesn't it? And
right.
And the factual accuracy of any anonymous tip is not the end of the discussion, which I think is your proposition, that if you don't assure the factual accuracy, then you don't still do a totality of the circumstances. In other words, the state fails if they don't support the factual accuracy of the tip. Whereas the court really says it is a totality of the circumstances issue for reliability of the indicia for reasonable suspicion, right?
Correct, right. The totality of whether or not it's reasonable suspicion that this particular person has committed an offense or is committing an offense at the time. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to look at when we stop the car. There's not a probable cause of suspicion. But an anonymous tip in and of itself, as the court has said, anybody can call in and say, I think some idiot down the road is doing this or that, or whatever, and then we're going to send a dispatch out, stop that car, and search everybody. That's not what the Constitution says. That's not what any of the cases say.
Does this record include any other circumstances that would have considered in their totality have supported the officer's decision to search that car?
No, Your Honor, because that officer says, I saw the car, I had to dispatch, I immediately stopped the car.
Okay.
He didn't plead further.
For instance, the tip includes the suggestion that this car has guns. It apparently has several, I guess, young males. Is that going to be considered in the totality of the circumstances the threat of some violent conduct or weapon?
Your Honor, this case involved a car with five black people, two black males in the front seat, three black women in the back seat, in a neighborhood. We do not know the race of the police officers involved in this case. We do not know the racial composition of that neighborhood. Whether, you know, indicated because we have a male in the front seat that we're going to have shooting. In fact, if there had been shooting, I would assume that the dispatcher would have relayed that information to the police, saying, dispatcher, we have shots fired. We have somebody waving in a car. We have waving a gun. All we have is there's a car, there's a disturbance. Somebody says there's guns.
So guns. Well, guns is, that's not an aside. Guns is sort of important there, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor, in a poor neighborhood or a regular neighborhood, if you want to get police there, hey, if you say, I got a disturbance. Okay, you got a disturbance. Hey, the idiot's got a gun. You're going to get a police officer to show up more often to that call that you've got a gun, you know. Now, especially when you got an anonymous situation, I just want somebody to come down and get rid of these idiots over here that are causing a disturbance, and you call them up. Now, the time factor actually hurts at this thing because if you're in a situation you want the police to come, they don't show up, then you might call again and say, well, now the disturbance is let's get somebody in here. So we could have had the same person. That's the Court of Appeals. Could have been the same person calling twice, maybe, you know, if there was different people, that might have made a factor. If there had been some more information about who the call is. I mean, if it's somebody reliable. One of the court cases that's cited in my brief is a situation where a place is robbed. And the caller is known to the police, you know, the robbery walk, and they're saying, stop the car, and the court found it upheld that search. You know, you got that situation, you got to add it back, you got some more information. This really was a call to go to a disturbance. It came from the court, in the description provided by the state, there were two witnesses, like Frederick. There were three cars dispatched, two to the one disturbance, one to the other disturbance with the guns. But once the car was stopped, there was numerous police officers there. I mean, it was a huge amount of resources. It was not just a statue of law. It was like a dragnet in this particular case, according to the record. And that's not what the Constitution is. You know, we're to stop cars when we have reasonable suspicion that they committed an offense, or we have believe that the person has done something illegal. In this case, there was no attempt to stop as well. This was a search, this was a seizure, this was a typical type of arrest. Now, the state has argued that we shouldn't suppress because the police relied upon the dispatcher sent to the call. They never actually went to the call when they were dispatched. They stopped the car in the process of the call. And, Your Honor, we decide that just because there's not a call, we can stop any car. Is there any 14th Amendment protection for being in the car? Are we only going to say then that if a police officer stops the car on his own without a dispatch, we then look at a test, and then those cases are suppressed, not any other ones? In order for someone to have some 14th Amendment right in their car, there must be reasonable suspicion on the part of the police to stop that car. No further questions from the court. Which the court finding. In this particular case, it was a factual weighing of the evidence by the court below. And those justices were just as confident as anyone here or in any other court of appeals to make those decisions.
Maybe more so.
And, we, you know, this court of appeals said we shouldn't be taking cases of court to reweigh facts. This case should have been improperly granted because it doesn't present an issue that this court really needs to decide. The Constitution and the U.S. Supreme Court address the issues in this case. The police officer had an opportunity to follow that car. The police officer should have used better judgment in this case. The dispatcher had more information he should have gave. The court relied on the record he had and made an appropriate decision. This case should be dismissed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wetter. And Mr. Patcher, you've used your time, but take 30 seconds if you'd like.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I think we've overstated the case. If we say we let the police officers do a reasonable, proportional preservation of the status quo, that our civil liberties are out the window, and I have pointed out to this court that all of the Commonwealth countries, England, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, go as far as you want. Most of the European nations, all of them that I'm aware of, all Scandinavian countries, Germany, France, Belgium, Holland, are all free countries and have been for some time. They don't think you have to have an exclusionary rule to do that. We're a call to one. We're not asking that this court overthrow the exclusionary rule. We're asking this court to be reasonable in its application.
Constable, the side just suggested an outright win, they ought to get an improv. Is that a better result than for you to lose?
Your Honor, I think that's for this court to determine.
I mean, is there enough written, if you were to write this case coming out for them, are we in danger of just handcuffing the police? I mean, I think we'd all agree that if you're in this neighborhood, you'd still maybe be happy that the officers stopped, inquired, did something about the guns. Maybe you're all better off with the hanging there and no prosecution. I mean, there's a fair amount of police work where potential for something further evil to happen is quelled by police officers' presence and questions.
I wouldn't be so presumptuous as to suggest there's anyone better than this court to make that kind of policy determination. I would submit that as a matter of public policy, as a matter of preservation of constitutional values, and as a matter of reasonableness, the court can and should sustain the state's position that preservation of the status quo in this circumstance is appropriate and, according to the constitutional values, a reasonable response, even if a seizure is reasonable.
Thank you, Mr. Patrick. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.